Whether you're a skeptic or a believer, join me, Rob McConnell, as together we'll investigate the world of the paranormal and the science of parapsychology here on the X-Zone Radio TV show on XZBN and the X-Zone TV channel on Simul TV. Since 1990, the X-Zone Radio TV show has been the place where people dare to believe and dare to be heard. Together, we'll investigate UFOs, aliens, ghosts, Bigfoot, psychic phenomenon, lake monsters, conspiracy theories, government cover-ups, the truth embargo, alien abductions, ESP, haunted locations from around the world, and so much more. With over 28 years of broadcasting and more than 4,500 individual guests, the X-Zone is truly a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality, as evidenced by the credibility, integrity, and professionalism of the guests that we bring to our international audience. If you have seen a UFO, had a close encounter, seen a ghost, Bigfoot, lake monster, or a story that you would like to share or have investigated, contact me, Rob McConnell, by sending me your email to xzone@xzoneradiotv.com, or you can call toll-free 1-800-610-7035, extension 143, and on Skype, X-Zone Radio TV. For more information on the X-Zone Radio TV show with yours truly, Rob McConnell, visit www.xzoneradiotv.com or www.xzonetvchannel.com or simultv.com and xzbn.net. Until next we meet here in the X-Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, always remember, X-Zone Nation, keep your eyes to the sky and your heart in the light.
The X-Zone Radio Show with Rob McConnell is largely an opinion talk show. All opinions, comments, or statements of fact expressed by Rob McConnell's guests are strictly their own and are not to be construed as those of the X-Zone Radio Show or endorsed in any manner by Rob McConnell, Realmar McConnell Media Company, the X-Zone Broadcast Network, its affiliated networks, stations, employees, or advertisers.
All Hit Radio.
Welcome to the X-Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob McConnell.
And welcome back to the X-Zone, everyone. I am Rob McConnell, and for the next 4 hours, I am your host and your guide as together we cross the time-space continuum to this place that I call the X-Zone. It's a place where people dare to believe and dare to be heard. It's a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. And the X-Zone comes to you Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern until 2 a.m. Eastern on the X-Zone Broadcast Network on Simul Radio, Simul TV, iHeart Radio, Spotify, and affiliates around the world. Now, if you'd like to get more information about the X-Zone Broadcast Network and the fine programming that we have for you, visit www.xzbn.net. And on Simul TV, the X-Zone TV channel, just visit www.simultv.com. X-Zone Nation, my guest this hour is Dr. Seth Shostak. And Seth is Senior Astronomer and Institute Fellow at the SETI Institute in Mountain View, California. He has an undergraduate degree in physics from Princeton University and a doctorate in astronomy from the California Institute of Technology. For much of his career, Seth conducted radio astronomy research on galaxies and has published approximately 60 papers in professional journals. Seth has written more than 500 popular magazine, newspaper, and web articles on various topics in astronomy, technology, film, and television. For a decade, he chaired the International Academy of Astronomics, SETI's Permanent Committee. Every week, he hosts the SETI Institute's one-hour science radio show, Big Picture Science. Seth has written, edited, and contributed to half a dozen books. His most recent tome is Confessions of an Alien Hunter, A Scientist's Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and he is one of the authors of a college textbook on astrobiology. For more information on Dr. Seth Shostak, the website to visit, there's two websites, bigpicturescience.org and SETI.org. And Seth, welcome back to the X-Zone. It has been way too long.
Well, it has, Rob, and it's a pleasure to be back.
Seth, you are busy. You do your radio show. You are still very active with SETI. We see you on, I don't know, the different television shows that you're on, you know, lending your expertise to all the different shows that are out there. But the question that I have for you is a very simple one, Seth, and I know that with all the knowledge you have amassed over the years, this will be a very simple question for you to answer. Have we found life beyond Earth yet?
Well, there are people who think we have, Rob, but I think if you were to poll the next 5,000 astrobiologists or any other kind of scientists that you meet on the streets, I think you would find that most of them would say, no, we haven't. We still don't know about any life beyond Earth, at least not in a compelling fashion.
Well, what do we know, Seth? What have we found, you know, with all the years that SETI has been doing the wonderful work that they've been doing, scouring the skies, listening for that signal, and all the different astronomers and all the different scientists that are out there as well, working very hard to answer this question. In your opinion, are we any closer to getting to the answer, or is the answer still eluding us?
Well, it's hard to tell whether we're any closer. You know, this is one of those experiments that it's just going to fail and fail and fail and fail and fail. Mm-hmm. And then one day, one presumes, one day it's going to succeed. So to ask, you know, 3 weeks before you are successful, well, what do you think? Yeah. Are you any closer? I mean, nobody knows. Nobody knows. So, but what you can do is say, look, what we've learned in the past 25 years that's kind of changed the game a little bit is the fact that there are lots of planets out there. I mean, when I was a kid, right, that was before the French and Indian Wars. When I was a kid, the facts were that we didn't know about any planets out there. I mean, we thought there were planets, but, you know, we didn't know in what profusion, if it really was even profusion, planets existed. Now we know that planets are very, very common. That's good news from the standpoint of finding life in space. And we also have the idea that roughly one in five star systems has a planet sort of like the Earth, right? Maybe the same temperature, same mass, you know, that sort of thing. So it looks like what we've learned is that there's a lot of real estate, but whether any of that cosmic real estate is inhabited, that we still don't know.
When we look at the sky through the eyes of Hubble and Kepler, as well as the many Earthbound telescopes that are giving us an entirely new picture of space. Like, I remember when I was a kid, you know, we just thought space was black. It was dark. It was void. And yet when we see the pictures today, it's bright. It seems almost to be alive, you know, casting any doubt in anyone's mind that we are alone in this great big existence. The advances in optical astronomy, as well as radio astronomy, how has this helped you to better understand or to better search for the answers that everybody's looking for?
Well, the relentless advance of astronomy, it's true, have clued us in not only to the existence of all these planets out there. I mean, there are more planets out there than there are stars, and there are a lot of stars. Hey, take our own Milky Way. I mean, you know, maybe you have use for it there in Canada. Take our Milky Way, and, you know, it's got 300-400 billion stars. That's a lot of stars. But the number of planets is probably five times that number. I mean, there are more than a trillion planets. That's our galaxy. And there are 2 trillion other galaxies we can see with a telescope like Hubble. So, you know, there's all this opportunity for life. So in a sense, that helps at least psychologically, because now we know, well, if there's no other life out there, then there must be something very, very special about Earth. And, you know, everybody likes Earth, at least the people that live here like Earth. But, you know, maybe it's not all that special. It's like thinking that my goldfish are really special. And I'm sure they're different than other goldfish in some way, but they're not all that special. So, you know, that's kind of the lesson of astronomy. The universe is incredibly vast. We can only see a tiny part of it, actually.
Right.
But it's incredibly vast, and it's the same everywhere. As far as we can tell, it's, you know, you don't have to hanker after living in another galaxy far, far away and long, long ago, because it wouldn't be much different from our own galaxy. So, you know, those are all encouraging signs saying that you're just another, you know, another duck in the row, and there are probably lots of other ducks out there.
Are we looking for the right components, or are we looking for life out there as we have life down here? For example, is it possible that we're looking for carbon-based units where in other galaxies or other planets life could be, for example, based on, some other element, and that by us not expanding our search parameters just by looking for the carbon-based traces of life, that we're actually missing life out there?
Well, of course that's possible, but you have to consider under what circumstances do we even care whether the aliens are carbon-based, as they always were on Star Trek, you know?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I think that Mr. Spock and all his successors would say, well, it's a carbon-based life form, Captain. I don't know how we could tell that from space, but somehow he could. But, you know, suppose they were, I don't know, aluminum-based or silicon-based. Of course, they use a lot in science fiction. There's some justification for that because of the chemistry. But whatever. I mean, you don't really care. If something walks up to you on another planet, you know, you don't say, wait, hold it. By the way, Zork, are you carbon-based or, you know, molybdenum-based or something else? You don't really care. And you would recognize it no matter what it was. So when it comes to looking for intelligent life, we're looking for, you know, radio signals or flashing lasers or something that would tell us that there's somebody out there who's technologically competent. Whether they're carbon-based or not is kind of a secondary consideration. But where it really matters is in what the space agencies like NASA do to look for life beyond Earth, because they're looking for life in our own solar system. So, you know, they would like to send, I don't know, Bruce Willis to Mars with a bunch of roughnecks from, you know, Edmonton or something, and then drill a hole, you know, half a mile deep and pull up the muck and look at that. And, you know, then it might matter whether it's carbon based or not, because the only way you would be sure to whether you'd found life or not would be either to see it wiggle when you looked at it under a microscope or do some chemical tests. And if you do chemical tests, you know, you have to make some assumption. But carbon based is probably the dominant kind of biology in the universe, actually, for good reasons.
All right, but isn't that based on what we know here on this planet Earth, based on our science and our physics, but it may not apply to other planets?
Well, it does apply to other planets. That's the curious thing. And you might say, well, how do you know that, Seth? Have you been there?
Well, how do you know that, Seth? Have you been there?
Yeah, well, I haven't been there, actually. I haven't. But you do know that. That's one of the great accomplishments of astronomy over the past, I don't know, 400 years. Certainly the last 200 years, in which you could just examine the physics in stars that are, you know, halfway across the universe, even farther away.
All right, Seth, we're going to have to take a break here. Please stand by. Exonation, our guest this hour is the one and only Dr. Seth Shostak. Two websites, bigpicturescience.org and SETI.org. And Seth and I will be back after this short break. Don't go away.
It's hard to listen to the news without realizing we're living in volatile, unprecedented times. Yet never has there been such an opportunity to transform the human condition. As old structures fail, where can we find the guidance to co-create a better way? Find Your Path Home is an ever-evolving, leading-edge information, education, and healing resource center designed to support and guide you on your path to unity and enlightenment. Based on sound principles employed by shamans worldwide, we provide techniques that can support you through the current transitions. offering online shamanic classes, international long-distance shamanic healing sessions, complimentary Mission Evolution radio episodes and Stairway to Heaven TV vignettes, seminars, retreats, and much more. All of this can be found on findyourpathhome.com.
So I was watching the X-Zone TV channel last night when I was abducted by aliens, and they kept repeating to me over and over again, SimulTV.com, SimulTV.com.
What's SimulTV.com?
That's what I asked them. They had it written on the side of their UFO.
How do you spell that?
UFO.
No, I mean SimulTV.com.
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 Right. SimulTV.com.
Interesting that you were abducted by aliens in a SimulTV.com UFO last night.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Now that you mention it, I remember now last night, I was awakened from a deep sleep. My great-grandmother was standing there. She said she'd come from the hereafter to tell me about SimulTV.com. She even spelled it out for me.
SimulTV.com, sonny boy.
SimulTV.com.
SimulTV.com, sonny boy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Guys, you'll never guess what my psychic guru just told me.
SimulTV.com.
Exactly. Are you guys psychic too?
Of course.
We all know about SimulTV.com.
SimulTV.com.
So you are a star. Okay. Nobody knows you like I do. You will go far. Okay. Nobody knows you like I.
Welcome back, everyone. This is the X-Zone. I am Rob McConnell. Our guest this hour is Dr. Seth Shostak. And two websites to visit and find out more about Seth and the great work that he and SETI does. BigPictureScience.org and SETI.org. Before we went to the break, we were talking about looking for life in... It sounds like a Johnny Lee song, looking for life in all the wrong places. But, you know, how do we know that we could be being contacted by extraterrestrials, whether from this galaxy or other galaxies, but we're just not using the right method of listening?
Well, of course, that is possible. I mean, it's possible we're not using the right method for listening, or maybe we are using the right method for listening, but our equipment is not sensitive enough, you know, or if when it comes to a radio search, maybe you're listening at the wrong spot on the radio dial or whatever. I mean, there are lots of ways to miss things, but you don't have to worry that their chemistry or their physics is different than ours because, as we were saying before the break, this is one of the great triumphs of astronomy, namely that the whole universe is built of the same stuff following the same physics. And we know that. That's not just a nice idea. That's something you can demonstrate with telescopes. So, you know, they've got the same physics, and that means they're going to trip across things like radio or lasers or, you know, any of these kinds of technologies. And maybe they have technology that's way beyond ours. That's possible. Or maybe they're, you know, they expect us to have radio receivers that are a trillion times more sensitive than what we have, that kind of thing. All of that is possible. But on the flip side, if you don't make a search, the chances that you're going to find something and get an invitation to go to Stockholm and collect a prize aren't really very great.
You know, years ago, NASA's chief scientist, Ellen Stofan, said a couple of years ago that she figures we'll find some extraterrestrial biology within two decades. What did she mean by that?
She was undoubtedly thinking of finding it in our own solar system. So she's talking about biology, not aliens. You know, when you think of aliens, you think that they, they're smart enough to abduct you or at least to, you know, try and hold up their side of the conversation. But if you're talking about just biology, well, you know, a little amoeba, that's biology. And it's, you know, maybe not very interesting to invite over for dinner, although they might come anyway. Who knows? But that's what she was talking about, microbial life, because if you think about it, you know, there might be life on Mars. Everybody likes the idea of life on Mars. But if there is life on Mars, it's, you know, it's underground, maybe a mile underground. I mean, it could be very deep in aquifers. It's just, you know, bodies of water. They're deep underneath the rusty, dusty surface of Mars. And you'd need a microscope to see them. So they'd be microbial. Okay, fine. But at least now you know there's some biology. But right. It's not just Mars. There are three moons of Jupiter. There are two moons of Saturn. And some people have even suggested that the high clouds of Venus might have some sort of biology. So those are all places that NASA could get to with its rockets, right? So I think that that's why she said within 20 years we'll find some life, because she's talking about microbial life in our solar system.
Yeah, but you, Seth, have said that you figured we'd find intelligent life in the same time frame. Now, what motivated you to say that? And
yeah, well,
was that just wishful thinking?
Well, maybe it was, Rob. I hope not. But I said it actually before Ellen Stofan made her remarks, and I kind of wonder whether she had heard about it, because it was sort of, you know, it made some small impact, like my presence always does, a rather small impact.
Oh, I don't know about that, my friend.
Well, it depends on how, you know, if they push me out of an eighth-story window, the impact could be greater. But I have to say that this was a talk that I gave at an international conference in Bremen, Germany, actually, about 8 or 9 years ago. I don't even remember. But
of course.
I was talking to some crowd there. I think they were mostly students, actually, university students. And somebody asked, so when are we going to find the aliens? I mean, you know, you get that question frequently enough.
Well, they're just south of the American border.
What, Bremen, Germany? Oh, those
no,
aliens.
Those okay. aliens, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. Do you think we can detect them? I'm not sure we can detect them.
Oh, we can detect them. We just can't deport them.
Well, okay, there's that. But, heck, I say invite them over for dinner.
With the goldfish?
With the goldfish.
There you go.
Yes. You could serve the goldfish, or maybe the other way around. In any event, I mean, I was giving this talk, and I answered the guy. And I said, well, you know, on the basis of looking at how quickly we're scanning the skies.
Yeah.
I think if there are aliens to be found, we'll find them within 24 years. That's what I said. And I bet everybody a cup of Tim Hortons or something. So that, you know, that was my bet, that within 24 years, and this was like 8 years ago, so I guess I only have like 16 more years, but that I said that I thought that this was something that we're going to see in our lifetime.
You know, with the all the publicity that this U.S. Navy sighting and or tracking has brought into the UFO scene, the Tic Tac, and then you've got the show with Tom DeLonge on History Channel. You've got a lot of different TV shows out there these days, and I see you on most of them, by the way. How does this affect the work that you, as a serious astronomer, as well as the work that the people at SETI are doing and NASA are doing, does this open up the door to a better understanding of what you and the other scientists are doing, or does this kind of make it look, well, hell, the Navy found these extraterrestrials, how come the scientists couldn't?
Yeah, well, I think that's actually a good question, because even the Navy doesn't say they were extraterrestrials.
Right.
The Navy says they found something odd. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can find odd things all the time. I find them in my neighborhood all the time.
You and me both.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're aliens, although, you know, you like that idea. I mean, the question, I suppose it's a bit like saying, do the reports of ghosts in the attic affect people in the construction trades who are framing houses? You know, I got to frame up this attic here, Bob. But what do you think about the fact that people hear ghosts in their attics? I don't think it's going to affect the way he frames up that attic. I really don't. I get phone calls every day. Maybe that's not a good analogy, but it just came to mind, a deranged mind. But, I get phone calls every day, emails every day from people who claim that they have good evidence for visitation, that they're, you know, UFOs that they've got videos of and photos of. And, you know, it's not my job to look at these things. We don't investigate these things. But I do suggest, I said, look, if you want to send me the photos or the videos, I'll take a look at them and give you my opinion, which I often do. I mean, they often send them, and I usually give them my opinions because photography happens to be a longstanding hobby of mine. So sometimes I can recognize very obvious photographic effects. I can't say that everybody is, or anybody is, grateful. You know, and I tell them, actually, that's internal reflection in your zoom lens or something like that. They never write back and say, that's great. I'm glad you explained that to me. You know, I think I'll go out and have dinner now. I mean, right. It's you know, they're usually upset by the fact that I've explained it as something prosaic. But anyhow, that but only in that sense do I really deal with it. I obviously it's not part of my research.
And just getting back to your ghost analogy with the construction workers and the attic, that is only applicable based on the number of empty bottles of Jack Daniels they find in the attic.
Well, how'd they get up there? Isn't that a lot of trouble? I don't know. But
you notice how you and I always digress.
Yeah, well that's all right. I'm not against digression. I think it's better than depression or regression or any of these other eschins.
How are things going at SETI?
Well, look, the story at SETI, the SETI Institute is, these days, mostly astrobiology. In other words, the majority of the people whose offices surround me at the moment here, although it's kind of late in the afternoon, so they're maybe not surrounding me at the, you know, just at the moment, but most of them are doing what's called astrobiology. Most of these people are studying, for example, Mars. You know, the history of Mars, was there standing water on Mars for millions of years in the past, that kind of thing. Or they're interested in the moons of Jupiter, Saturn, these sorts of places. So they're interested in life in space, but, you know, microscopic life in space. The number of people here that work in the SETI program is much, much smaller. It's just a handful. And the reason for that is money. Nobody's interested in money, but the facts are that, well, maybe I shouldn't say that, but, you know, this other kind of research is supported by NASA and other, you know, federal agencies. But SETI is not and hasn't been for 24 years and more. So, you know, the only way to do these experiments where you're trying to pick up ET on the radio is to have private donors give money that allows you to do that. So that means it's very restricted in the amount of effort that can be put in.
Has SETI ever come close to that signal that shocked the world when we were watching Contact? And you and I have to take a break. I'm sorry about that. But ExoNation, please stand by. Dr. Seth Shostak is my very special guest this hour. And if you'd like to find out more about Seth and the great work that he does, bigpicturescience.org, as well as, do you have your pencils and paper ready? SETI.org. That's SETI.org. This is the X Zone. I am Rob McConnell. We're coming to you from our broadcast center and studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. And if you'd like to find out more about the programming that we have available for you 24/7, 365, visit www.xzbn.net. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this news break. They are here, and they've been here for thousands of years, making their presence known in the shadows. They might be seen by a lonely motorist on a deserted road late at night, or by a frightened and confused husband in the bedroom he is sharing with his wife. But who are they? What do they want? Why are they here? Perhaps most concerning, has the government been aware of their presence all along? The new book by Elie Marzulli, UFO Disclosure, The 70-Year Cover-Up Exposed, delves into the world of UFOs. Can full disclosure be soon? Order now and receive a free hour and 37-minute DVD on the UFO phenomenon, UFOs Are Real. Get both the book and the DVD, a $40 value, for only $19.99. To order your book and DVD today, go to lamarzulli.net. That's lamarzulli.net.
Rob McConnell here, presenting an overview for Nicholas Paul Jinniks, author of a fascinating book, Amen. It presents facts revealed by Egyptologists, facts that enable us to understand why Amen is the beginning of creation of God. It provides recommendations for religious leaders of the major religions to unify their beliefs and teach the word of God, love one another. Amen informs people how mankind conceived God. It was the Egyptians that developed the concepts of a soul, a hereafter, and son of God, and finally, After the worship of many gods, they conceived the belief in one universal God, the maker of all there is. For more information, visit www.futureofgodamen.com. That's www.futureofgodamen.com.
You have heard of the X-Zone? Now watch it on Simo TV, plus 500 video games, live TV channels, free video on demand, worldwide, and more. Does this sound like tomorrow's television? Well, it is, but you can have it today, right now. It is Simo TV. Simo TV offers what the others only wish they could provide. 15 exclusive channels like X-Zone, sci-fi, and horror. We are worldwide. No other provider offers that. 500 built-in video games. No need to have an extra expensive system. We have them included. Free video on demand. Live streaming events from around the world. Interactive online network and much more. Tomorrow's TV today. Simo TV. Sound too good to be true? Well, it's not. You can have Simo TV today. Sign up at simultv.com. Do it today.
Nation, Dr. Seth Shostak is my special guest this hour. bigpicturescience.org and SETI.org. And you know, Seth, I think so many people remember that awe-inspiring moment during the movie Contact when this message was heard and it was decoded by Jodie Foster. How true or how can you compare the movie aspect compared to the work that is being done by SETI?
Well, nobody here looks like Jodie Foster to begin with.
Well, wait a minute. That's not what I've heard.
Oh, or Matthew McConaughey. But
not even your goldfish?
The goldfish, yeah, they're kind of anatomically adapted to water. So, or to a filet of fish sandwich.
Uh-huh.
Look, that the novel on which that film was based, of course, Contact, was written by Carl Sagan in 1983. Now, Carl Sagan was involved in SETI, so, you know, he knew whereof he spoke when it came to the science. And so the science is actually fairly accurate. But there are fictional aspects to the whole story. I mean, when it talks about SETI, when they show Jodie Foster, you know, trying to pick up radio signals using this very large array in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, that's not entirely accurate because the very large array has not been used for SETI, although it may be in the near future. And putting on earphones, Jodie puts on earphones, but I guess she's really listening to her favorite rapper because if that's not the way you listen for signals from space because, you know, you could only monitor two channels that
sure.
way. I mean, we monitor 72 million, I think it is. So, you know, all of that is slightly inaccurate, but Sagan knew that. And this is a matter of dramatizing things for the movie, right? I mean, it's got to be dramatic. It's got to be emotional, those sorts of things. It was fairly accurate. But then, you know, Jodie builds this complicated machine that the
yeah.
aliens tell her, build this machine. And, of course, she does it. And the machine will allow her to jump through a wormhole and go through space. Well, I mean, that's slight exaggeration about what happens here on a daily basis. Most of my colleagues don't jump into wormholes before the afternoon's over. although it might be exhilarating if they were to do so. I was actually a consultant on the film, so, you know, they would call up just about every day and ask questions like what it looks like when you go through a wormhole, you know, as if I did that on a regular basis. So, I mean, there were things about it that were clearly fictional, but on the other hand, It gave many in the public kind of an idea of what we do on a daily basis. So that was a good thing.
Actually, my producer just found out that what Jodie Foster was listening to in her headphones was a show called Big Picture Science.
It could have been, although we weren't on the air then. But anyhow, she was prescient. Yes, yes, yes. And when they finally picked up that mm-hmm. signal, that signal, somebody told me it sounds like a pile driver hitting a pod of whales. I mean, I don't really know what that sounds like, but that's kind of what it was like.
Has there ever been a moment where the people at SETI, you included, had believed that you had actually found that signal, that reach from another star or another galaxy or another universe, that signal that proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that someone out there was trying to contact us?
Yes, we used to get lots of intriguing signals mm-hmm. back in the old days. Now, when I say old days, that would have been in mostly the 70s, maybe the early 80s, because back then the way you did this kind of experiment was you would record the data coming in through the antennas and then examine it later. You didn't have the computing power that would allow you to examine it as it came in. It was kind of like a fire hose. You couldn't mm-hmm. Sort of look through the water being squirted your way. Only offline could you do that. And then you would find all these signals, and you think, oh, my gosh, what do you think it is, Ralph? Could this be the Klingons? And, you know, then the only way to figure it out was to go back maybe months, even years later, and point in the same direction and hope to find the signal again. And you never did. So that wasn't very satisfactory. Today's computing capabilities, of course, are much greater. And as a result, what happens today is that you analyze the data more or less as mm-hmm. they come in. So that's a real improvement. But the bottom line of all that is that you don't get too many false alarms anymore. The last one that we got that really, I think, got everybody excited was 20 years ago, actually. And, that was kind of interesting. I was at home having mm-hmm. dinner. And, the boss here called me up at home and said, get on down here. We've got a signal. And for a day, it looked like it might be the real signal, but it turned out it wasn't. It was a European satellite broadcasting. But that was very interesting because it showed what would happen if we really did get a signal. I mean, you know, I kept waiting for the Men in Black to show up and that sort of thing.
But what would be the protocol if SETI did, in fact, get that signal?
Well, there is a protocol. In fact, I was involved in rewriting the whole protocol because mm-hmm. it was unduly complicated. But it basically says three things. One, check it out. And of course you're going to do that. I mean, that's just good science. If you get a result that, you know, is pretty exciting but uncertain, the first thing you do is you spend a day or two checking it out. You have to do that. The second thing you do is, if you've checked it out, is you just tell everybody, you know, we found the signal. And you might think, oh, I bet you wouldn't tell everybody. I mean, you know, there's kind of that conspiracy mindset. But think about it. I mean, if you pick up a signal, what you want is somebody to verify the signal.
Sure.
Nobody's going to, you know, believe it if you're the only one to have found this signal. That's not good enough. So you would notify people in, other countries that have antennas, and that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's the way you found it. And so very quickly, there would be many, many groups of researchers around the world that would know about it. And, of course, you would also tell the press, the first people to call up whenever you get a signal, because there's no secrecy. The first people to call up are, in fact, the press. You know, the newspapers are calling, the local radio stations are calling, the networks are calling. I mean, you know, it's just a big story. So you tell them, all right, well, we picked up the signal. We don't know much more than that. But then what would happen is, you would try and narrow down where it's coming from and look for planets and all that stuff. But the third part of the protocol is, and this is the only, if you will, non-obvious part of the protocol, is don't broadcast anything back until you've checked with people in other countries and make sure they're down with that idea.
Why?
Well, I think that's a good question, actually, Rob. Why? It's just that if you broadcast something back, other people might not know that you've done that. If the the Italians suddenly broadcast something back. Hey, yeah, we're the Italians. Mm-hmm. And don't talk to these other people here on Earth. Just talk to us because we've got the best restaurants or whatever. And
right.
it's just a precaution so that some countries don't feel cut out of the conversation. I don't know that this is a legitimate concern, to be honest.
It makes sense. Yeah. It makes sense when you explain it like that.
Yeah. Yes and no. I mean, if you pick up a signal, everybody's going to know about it, mm-hmm. so they can all listen in. I mean, they'll build something if they need to build something. And also keep in mind, these aliens are probably going to be, I don't know, 100 light years away or even more. And that means the signal has taken 100 years to get to you. There's no real hurry to, you know, get on the microphone and say, hey, yeah. we're the Earthlings. You know, lovely to hear from you, and we'd like to learn more. You know, it's going to take hundreds of years for any kind of round-trip conversation. So,
I remember years ago, I spoke to the acting director of NASA, and I asked him point blank, what would you do or what would NASA do if they found proof of extraterrestrial life or that UFOs are in fact real? And he said, we would tell everyone because that would guarantee us funding.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And yet there were so many people who believed that NASA and the scientific community, as well as the government, are suppressing the truth about extraterrestrials, UFOs, and life on other planets. And I find that so ridiculous.
Well, I agree with you. I think it is kind of nutty if you think about it. Yeah. You know, there are plenty of people who sort of troll through the photos made by the rovers on Mars.
Yeah.
And they find evidence of all sorts of stuff. I mean, you know, they're lizards and they're
I saw the Bigfoot one.
Yeah, well, I hadn't seen the Bigfoot one, but there are many sorts of things. And clearly, but the accusation is the fact that they don't see more news about this is because NASA is covering it up. And that really is goofy because indeed nothing would improve the NASA budget situation more than to find some evidence that there was some life on Mars, dead or alive. Yeah. I mean, that would be great for them. And yet, you know, somehow the public thinks that they have some reason to keep it quiet. And when I ask people, why would NASA ever cover that up? And they say, well, the public couldn't handle the news. I mean, really, if they were to find some sort of life on Mars, do you think people would ride in the streets of Toronto? I mean, it's not likely. I don't think so.
Hey, don't forget, marijuana is legal up here, so nobody does rioting for anything anymore.
Yeah, nobody does rioting. Well, yes, it could be. But in any case, it doesn't make any sense to me, but a lot of people believe it.
All right, Seth, please stand by. We've got to take our final break for this hour. Exo Nation, Dr. Seth Shostak is our special guest. He is the Senior Astronomy and Institute Fellow with SETI. And his two websites, bigpicturescience.org and SETI.org. And we'll be back as we wrap up this hour here in the X-Zone from our broadcast center in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, where, to the best of my knowledge, no one is high yet.
Standing here beside you, want so much to give you this love in my heart that I'm feeling for you. Let them say we're crazy. I don't care about that. Put your hand.
They are here, and they've been here for thousands of years, making their presence known in the shadows. They might be seen by a lonely motorist on a deserted road late at night, or by a frightened and confused husband in the bedroom he is sharing with his wife. But who are they? What do they want? Why are they here? Perhaps most concerning, has the government been aware of their presence all along? The new book by Ellie Marzulli, UFO Disclosure, The 70-Year Cover-Up Exposed, delves into the world of UFOs. Can full disclosure be soon? Order now and receive a free hour and 37-minute DVD on the UFO phenomenon, UFOs Are Real. Get both the book and the DVD, a $40 value, for only $19.99. To order your book and DVD today, go to lamarzulli.net. That's lamarzulli.net.
Christopher Fulton is a survivor of the national security state. All he wanted to do was preserve history when he acquired a Cartier watch from the estate of President Kennedy's personal secretary. But that simple act set off a terrible chain reaction. He was pursued by the U.S. Justice Department and the FBI, thrust into the middle of the U.S. government's Assassination Records Review Board, even monitored and pursued by the Russian government. All because that Cartier watch was the missing link of evidence, a timepiece worn by JFK that fateful day in Dallas, a link resulting in Christopher being incarcerated and attacked for 9 years. Because he opened a hidden chapter in history. The intriguing journey outlined fully in Christopher Fulton's memoir, The Inheritance, is available now through Trinday.com or Amazon.com. The Inheritance, Poisoned Fruit of JFK's Assassination by Christopher and Michelle Fulton is a must-read, an incredible tale of how easily our own government can overrule justice. The Inheritance, Poisoned Fruit of JFK's Assassination.
And welcome back, everyone. Dr. Seth Shostak is our very special guest this hour. Two websites, bigpicturescience.org and SETI.org. And as I was saying during the break, Seth, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a great pleasure. And, you know, over the years I've had many guests, but there are certain guests that you have a rapport with, and you certainly, sir, are one of those guests, and I value the work that you've done over the years, and thanks again for coming on the show all the times that you have.
Well, listen, it's my pleasure. It really is, Rob. I appreciate it. I can't say that I've ever been to Hamilton except on the train from Niagara Falls to Toronto once. That was it.
But you know what? They've lifted that restriction, and people can actually get off in Hamilton these days.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. I don't know why, but they want to.
They eased up on security up there somehow.
It's either that or to see the Hamilton football team. You know, up here in Ontario, I don't know if you're aware of our political situation up here. Like, you know, you think you've got problems down there. Well, welcome to Canada. You know, our premier Doug Ford has decided to increase the speed limit on our highway, the QEW that goes from Toronto through the Niagara Corridor into Niagara Falls. And he's also legalized the sale and drinking of alcohol 3 hours prior to any game, for example, a football game, a hockey game, what they call tailgate parties. And, of course, marijuana is legal here. But what he also did was he cut out a lot of the medical care that people will need because of the other three things that he's done. So, and of course, our prime minister, his claim to fame is that he has a degree in poetry.
Well, I would like to pretend that I'm amazed, but I still think that we can see your position there and raise you three, but maybe I'm...
Seth, what is your opinion on the number of UFOs that are being seen, you know, as an astronomer?
Well, typically in the United States, and I can't speak to other countries, although I think the percentage is pretty similar. Mm-hmm. It's roughly 10,000 reports every year. Okay. These are reports to places like the UFO Reporting Center. I guess that's in the state of Washington, but also MUFON. There are mm-hmm. various organizations that collect these things. However, if you look at the number of reports, for the last roughly 5 years, they've been going down.
Yeah.
Not precipitously, but they've been slowly going down, as if the aliens either are losing interest in Earth, and I don't know what it is, fast food might not have been up to snuff, something's wrong, or that people feel that, well, making reports is not beneficial to them. So I don't know what it is, but the number of reported UFOs seems to be tapering off for some reason.
Yeah, does it have anything to do with the advanced technology that everyone has available to them these days? For example, the cell phones, the digital cameras, the webcams. It seems that as soon as all this new technology became available, the sightings started to drop because no one was taking pictures anymore. No one was getting those videos anymore. Is there a correlation in your opinion?
Well, there could be, but, you know, the people who are skeptical that the UFOs are actually alien craft like to point out that as the technology for making records of this sort of phenomena, you know, as you say, cell phones, now anybody can make a video or a photograph at any time by pulling out something from their pockets and aiming it at the sky, that now the evidence sort of recedes to accommodate the limitations of that equipment. Right. If we were still being visited in the way that people were claiming we were being visited in the 1950s, we'd have saucers, you know, hovering over the back 40.
Sure.
Well, any cell phone could make really great videos of that. But now the aliens keep a little bit farther away, right, just beyond the bounds of a conclusive kind of recording. Mm-hmm. And they find that suspicious. And I think justifiably that is kind of odd. That the aliens' behavior depends on the kind of technology we carry around. But I don't know that that accounts for the fact that there are fewer sightings. It may be that, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, there's probably some grad student somewhere who's studying this phenomenon, but I'm not that person.
It's also like the people who used to watch the ISS feed all the time.
Yes,
and they see those anomalies. And, of course, no matter what anybody says, it has to be a UFO, it has to be an extraterrestrial, it has to be somebody on Earth firing a laser at an extraterrestrial or craft. I don't see the sense in all of this.
Well, I don't know. I actually have a little box. It's made by a fellow actually in Canada who has taken a Raspberry Pi, you know, one of these very tiny computers, and he's programmed it up so that you just plug a monitor, just a computer monitor into it, and it shows you the video cameras from the ISS. So that's playing in my office, every day, all day. It's also playing at night, but there's nobody to watch it except maybe, you know, the ants and the mice. But it's fascinating to watch. You can see the whole Earth sliding around underneath it. This thing, I've never seen anything like, oh my God, that, you know, is an alien craft. But there are things that are seen that people, you know, interpret as being alien craft. But there are also explanations for all those things that people who are sort of in the space biz can tell you about. And you can either say, oh, that's what it is, or you can say, well, they're covering up. I mean, it's more interesting to think they're covering up. But on the other hand, that's a little more extreme. I don't know what to say about that. But one thing that did strike me, and when I was thinking about this a couple of months ago, is that there are an awful lot of amateur astronomers around, hundreds of thousands in the, you know, around the world. And they're looking at the sky whenever it's clear or whenever they feel like hauling their equipment out into the backyard. And they don't seem to report any UFOs, you know, hundreds of thousands of these people. And they are pretty good observers of the night sky. So they're not likely to be fooled by satellites or, you know, Venus or stuff like that. I made a quick calculation to determine, well, should they have seen any UFOs if there really are UFOs that are flying around? And the answer is, yeah, they should see a couple every week. But as far as I know, they don't.
Oh, by the way, pulling something out of your pocket and pointing it to the stars is illegal here on Hamilton, depending on what that object is.
What? I didn't know that. Well, I'll keep that in mind next time.
I just thought I'd share that with you since my producer was kind enough to put that on my screen in front of me. He said, please tell Seth. So there we go.
It's illegal in Hamilton. Well, that's curious.
No, you said, you know, take something out of your pocket and aim it at the sky.
Oh, well.
So he just went one step further.
I see. Okay. Uh-huh. Well, I'm not quite sure how to interpret that, but I'm also not sure whether I should try and interpret that. So there you go.
Believe me, after working with this guy all these years, I would just forget it.
Okay.
So what's next for you, Seth? You've done how many books?
Oh, well, I've been involved directly as an author or co-author in four books. Mm-hmm. Writing books is great, but I have to say that, you know, you can spend years writing a book, and then if you're lucky, 5,000 people buy the book. and you know, it's not about the money, of course, Rob. But on the other hand, you can write an article. It helps. You can write an article in an evening, and maybe 100,000 people will read that.
Yeah.
So I tend to write more articles these days. I write a lot of stuff for the NBC website, actually. And I have something coming out, I guess, this week in some sort of British tabloid. This publication asked me to write an op-ed piece about, you know, looking for aliens. And so I did. And then I looked up the publication itself, and, you know, the swimsuit photo was on the third page or something like that. I don't remember. But I thought, well, the British press is not altogether serious. That's what I said to myself.
We've got about a minute and a half left. Tell us about Confessions of an Alien Hunter, a Scientist's Search for Extraterrestrial Existence, Intelligence.
Yeah, well, that was my last trade book. Mm-hmm. And I had actually proposed to write a book about the future. And I was at a book fair in New York, and I was wandering around from one publisher to another. I had appointments with various publishers. And I got to National Geographic. They also put out books. And you know, I pitched it to them. They said, well, that's very interesting. Well, sure, you can write that. But what we want you to do first is write another book about the search for life in space. And I said, but I've done that. And they said, do it again. So that's how that happened. And it's kind of an updated version of something that I wrote years earlier. It's, you know, a much more ambitious book.
Seth, the time has come, my friend, when you and I must say so long. Again, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. Congratulations on your books, your radio show, and for helping millions of people around the world get a better understanding of what searching for someone or something out there is really about. Seth Shostak, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rob.
Exonation, if you'd like to get more information about Seth Shostak, visit, all right, do you have your pencils and paper ready? BigPictureScience.org and SETI.org. And I'll be back on the other side of this commercial break with the news as we continue here in the X-Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Don't forget, you can always find out about what's on the X-Zone Broadcast Network at www.xzbn.net. Once again, for more information on Seth Shostak, visit bigpicturescience.org and SETI.org. That is SETI.org. We'll be back. Don't go away. If you are looking for a safe, zero-calorie, natural option to the harmful artificial sweeteners on the market today, Just Like Sugar is what you're looking for. Just Like Sugar is a wonderful natural alternative for those health-conscious people who choose a calorie-restricted diet with a great, pure, sweet flavor that tastes just like sugar. Just Like Sugar is a great natural option for people suffering from diabetes and may be useful in restricted diet programs where standard sugars are not allowed and does not cause a laxative effect of some other sweeteners. Just Like Sugar comprises a perfect blend of chicory root fiber, natural calcium, natural vitamin C, and Just Like Sugar's sweetness comes from the natural flavors from the peel of the orange. Just Like Sugar is a natural alternative to harmful artificial sweeteners and will change the way that you believe all natural sweetener products taste. Just Like Sugar is available at your local Whole Foods markets, Wild Oats markets, Henry's, Sun Harvest, and many other fine natural food stores in the U.S., Canada, and worldwide.
They are here, and they've been here for thousands of years, making their presence known in the shadows. They might be seen by a lonely motorist on a deserted road late at night, or by a frightened and confused husband in the bedroom he is sharing with his wife. But who are they? What do they want? Why are they here? Perhaps most concerning, has the government been aware of their presence all along? The new book by Ellie Marzulli, UFO Disclosure, The 70-Year Cover-Up Exposed, delves into the world of UFOs. Can full disclosure be soon? Order now and receive a free hour and 37-minute DVD on the UFO phenomenon, UFOs Are Real. Get both the book and the DVD, a $40 value, for only $19.99. To order your book and DVD today, go to lamarzulli.net. That's lamarzulli.net.
You have heard of the X-Zone? Now watch it on Simo TV, plus 500 video games, live TV channels, free video on demand, worldwide, and more. Does this sound like tomorrow's television? Well, it is, but you can have it today, right now. It is Simul TV. Simul TV offers what the others only wish they could provide. 15 exclusive channels like X-Zone, Sci-Fi, and Horror. We are worldwide. No other provider offers that. 500 built-in video games. No need to have an extra expensive system. We have them included. Free video on demand. Live streaming events from around the world. Interactive online network and much more. Tomorrow's TV today. Simul TV. Sound too good to be true? Well, it's not. You can have Simul TV today. Sign up at simultv.com. Do it today.